Hashem's wisdom. And he uses the Lashon, he says, Hu Hamada, Vuhu Hayadeya, Vuhu Hayadua. And when he says over here, Kamashikasav Harambam, it's from three places. Combination of Hilchis Yisediyah Torah, Perik Beis, Hilchis Tshuva, Perik Hay, and Shmoina Prakim of the Rambam at the conclusion of it. And in all three of these places, the Rambam makes the same point, although every time he employs different language. There are three aspects. One is called Mada, Yaideya, and Yadua. Mada means the means of knowledge, the intellectual faculty. Yaideya is the knower, the soul that possesses the intellectual faculty. And Yadua is the object which is known. When a person comprehends a certain intellectual idea, what happens over here is a unity of three distinct realities. Yaideya is the knower, the human personality and spiritual soul that contains a faculty of wisdom. Then there is the Mada, there is the actual intellectual faculty, which is the means that the human being employs to comprehend and grasp. And then there is the Yadua, the intellectual idea, which entered the brain and the mind of the human being. By the human being, these are three distinct realities, the Yaideya, the Mada, the Yadua. Comes the Rambam and he says that Hashem, Hu HaMada, Hu HaYaideya, Vihu HaYadua. He, the very same Hashem, is the Mada, is the intellectual faculty of wisdom, is the idea, the knower, the source of it, and is the Yadua, is the conceived idea. There are no three distinct realities. That is the whole reality of Hashem. And as the Rambam puts it in Hilchis Yisediyah Torah, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makir Amitei V'Yedeya Isa Kamei Shehi. Hashem knows His truth as it is. He does not know through a deya, through a faculty of wisdom that is something external to him, like by us human beings, she'ein anu v'daitenu echad. But by Hashem, hu v'daitei v'chayav echad mikol tzad u'mikol pina b'chol derech yichud. He, his knowledge, his life, are one. From every side, from every angle, from every corner, every manner of unity. Nimtzis ata omer, it means what you're saying is, Hu hayedeya, v'hu hayadua, v'hu hadeya atzma hakol echad. He is the knower, he is what is known, and he is the means of knowledge, it's all one. That's his lashon Hilchis Yisediyah Torah. In Hilchis Tshuva, Shmoina Prakim, it's a little different. But the same idea. What was bothering the Rambam? Two problems. Problem number one is compartmentalization. Jewish faith is Hashem Echad. Hashem is unified. There are no compartments and components to Him. If there is Him, and then there is His faculty of wisdom, and then there is what He knows, so there are immediately three distinctions. That's number one. So we say, Hu Amada V'Hayadeya V'Hayadua. How is it possible? Because He knows everything from Himself, the Rambam explains. Since everything comes from Him, so we know, how do I know about you? Not from myself. I have to see you, I have to talk to you. So that's Yadua. But since everything comes from Hashem, so by knowing Himself, He knows everything. Because He knows them how it's in Him, and everything comes from Him. And that very knowledge is the Mada and the Yadaya. That's one issue the Rambam addresses. Another problem is change. If Hashem knows things by virtue of them existing outside of Him, and not by virtue of them coming from Him, that would mean that there is change, because new things happened, new things occur, things are created today, things are gone tomorrow, and His knowledge keeps on being altered from one thing to another thing. So the Rambam says, Hu amadu v'hayadeya v'hayadua. And the Rambam continues, V'davar zeh, ein b'yecholas adam lavini alburya. This is not within the power of any man to comprehend clearly. Kedeksiv, as it says in Iyov, Perek Yud Aleph, Acheker lo katimtza. Can you find and understand Hashem by searching? Acheker lo kaf, you'll search for Hashem, timtza, will you find Him? Uksiv, it says in Yeshaya, Perek Nunhei, ki loy machshevoy se machshevoy sechem. My thoughts are not your thoughts, Nu'um Hashem, says Hashem. Consequently, your thoughts, human thoughts, cannot possibly comprehend my thoughts, Hashem's Chachma. So, B'meila, what do we see from here? That Hu v'Chachmasa Yechad, He and His wisdom are one. There are not two distinct realities of Him and His Chachma, but they're rather one. So when you say that the Neshama is Nimshecha Mimachshavtei v'Chachmasa Yisbarach, comes from the wisdom and the thought of Hashem, Hu v'Chachmasa Yechad. The Mada and the Yedeya are one. Which means, in other words, Chelek Aleikam Imal Mamash. Because of Hu v'Chachmasa Yechad and the Neshama comes from Achshavtei and Chachmasa, it means that the Neshama is actually derived from Hu Himself, from the Hashem Himself, from Hashem's reality Himself. Let's look in the Haggah. On the side, you'll see there's a Haggah, a note. It's a footnote. There's a star after the word Harambam. It's in smaller letters. And many times in the throughout the chapters of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe has notes. He says, V'haydu lo yichachmei HaKabbalah, the Kabbalists have agreed with him, with the Rambam, that Hashem can be described as the knower, the knowledge, and the known all in one. K'mei shekasev b'pardes mi haramak, as stated in the Pardes of Rabbi Moshe Kardeviro, mentioned him before, the 16th century Makubal of Tzvas, Darizal, was for a significant time a Talmud of his. So in a sefer called Pardes Rimonim, in Shar Mohusva and Haga, Perik Yud Gimel, Shar Atzmus V'Kelim, Perik Dalit, he says, and he quotes the statement of the Rambam, that Hu Amadu Hu Hayedeyev Hu Hayadua. Now the Alter Rebbe says the Kabbalists have agreed with him, because it's not such a simple manner. The Rambam says this, but there are many people who argue with the Rambam, among them great Jewish philosophers, most notably the Maharal of Prague. Rabbi Yehuda Leva of Prague has a sefer called Gvureis Hashem. In the second introduction to that sefer, who does he criticize the Rambam? In quite powerful and unequivocal terms, he elaborates the issue on the issue. There's a very lengthy discussion over there. He brings out two problems. Problem number one, according to the Rambam, Hashem only knows those things that come from Him. But there are many things that go on in the world that don't come from Him. For example, when a person transgresses Hashem's will, how does he know that? He knows that from knowing himself. Well, the transgression exists within him. Of course not. The human being possesses free choice and makes that Avera. So if the Hashem's idea comes solely from Him, from knowing Him, because the Yadua is one with the Yedeya and the Mada, there are many things He might not know. It's a result of Klipa. But a person doing sin exists in Hashem. The ability of sin Hashem created. But the actual transgressions of humanity, He doesn't know that. He doesn't. But according to the Rambam, how does he know it? The whole Yadua dynamic is one with the Mad and the Yedeya dynamic. So how does he know it? That's one problem the Maral has. Getting late. Second problem the Maral has is a deeper problem, deeper, different problem. And that is the definition problem, it's called. He says, according to the Rambam, Hashem has a definition. He's defined. He's defined by wisdom, by intellect. True, quite abstract and sublime intellect beyond any human comprehension. Hu amada, hu ayedeya, hu ayedua. But nevertheless, mada, yedua, yedeya, has a description, it has a definition. Seichel has a parameter. It has not a physical parameter. It's not 6 inches tall or wide. But it has a definition. It has a description. It means something. The Maral even defines it. He says the definition of seichel is Yidiyas ha'adam davar k'moshahu. He defines seichel. Someone, the ability for a person to know things as they are. And you're defining Hashem. He says Hashem is descriptionless. He is definitionless. He has no definition whatsoever. The most abstract or sublime definition does not exist in the divine reality. He says, according to the Rambam, you should have called Hashem ha'seichel baruch hu. The seichel, blessed be He. We call Him HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does Kaddish mean? Kaddish means not only holy. Kaddish means the aloof, the nivdal, the sublime, the separated, because he is beyond any definition. He cannot be defined through any category or distinction as abstract. It may be. So the Maharal disagrees with the Rambam, and he holds that, of course, Hashem knows, but that's created. Just like Hashem created Arak, he also created a faculty called knowledge. And when he knows, he's using something he created. It's a creation. It's not that knowledge is him. He knows. Hashem is simple, he calls it. Simple means definitionless. Then he created many things. He created a concept called desire. He created a concept called knowledge, wisdom, just like he created a rock. Nothing to do with him. He created something called knowledge, and he knows does not mean that the knowledge is him. He is he. He uses this creation knowledge, and he uses it to know something. And then, of course, you could say he knows things from outside of him. The first question goes off, because the knowledge is not him. There's no problem of change, no problem of compartmentalization. That's the issue over here. Yeah. That's your only question on what I said. In other words, the issue, what I'm trying to bring up. No, it's a very good question, but it's a very complex issue. And unfortunately, I have no time now to get into the rest of it. That's one issue you're raising. I just discussed briefly the shitta of the Maharal and the Rambam. Mitzvah, next week we'll finish the Haggah. I'll elaborate a little more. But the point over here being is that it's a chiddush v'haydu lechach me'akabbalah. It's not stam. V'haydu lechach me'akabbalah, the chach me'akabbalah were made to the Rambam. And it's not because the chach me'akabbalah were unaware of the critique of the Maharal. Sometimes you can agree to someone because you don't know another opinion. So what do we gain? The idea is chach me'akabbalah, which knew everything the Maharal is saying. And furthermore, in Kabbalah, the reality of the divine is much more aloof and sublime even than the descriptions of the Maharal. Nevertheless, so therefore, the Rambam statement would be a valid statement, not only for the Rambam, but even in the field of Kabbalah and Chassidus as well. Right. Kabbalah reconciles the two, yeah. Okay. Two questions. You're asking two questions. A, how can we say that the neshama is a chelik alekamim ma'amam, is part of Hashem above? Hashem is indivisible, chas v'shalom. Hashem is not a composite of various components and elements, as discussed earlier, what the Rambam says, hu amadu, hu ayedeya, and so forth. So how can we define the neshama as a chelik alekamim ma'am? And B, your second question is, ultimately, what is the meaning that haben nimshach mimayachav, the child comes from the mind of the father? Obviously, apparently that's not the case. The child is created from the physical reproductive substance of the father and the egg of the mother, you're saying? And that is not formed or created in the mind of the father. Okay, first, let me address the second question, which will also explain and answer your first question. It's explained in various svarim that though the tipa, the reproductive substance of the father, is obviously not created in the brain, its original source is nevertheless the brain and mind of the father. The terminology one would use in modern scientific terms to explain this, I don't know. It would certainly be an interesting issue to research. This gentleman mentioned earlier a recent article he saw right in the science section of the Times suggesting a powerful link between the tipa and the brain. So that would actually be quite interesting to research. But whatever the model one uses to explain this, the idea that Alter Rebbe is conveying here is this. The tipa is a physical embodiment of the father's mind. The mind being the abode of his soul, of his identity, of his psyche, and so forth. The tipa is a physical embodiment of the father's soul and identity. The essence of the father's soul goes into the tipa. His mayach goes into the tipa. The core of his spiritual energy is manifested in this tipa, which develops into a child. So the child is not just a product from a certain organ in the father's body, or it's a creation of his external energy. The quintessence of the father is embodied in that tipa which develops into his child. In Sfarim and in Chassidus, it's explained that for this reason, the tipa comes about to be not just through the instruction of the mind, which also demonstrates a link between the two, but through the full involvement of the mind and the consciousness. No other phenomenon in the world engages the totality of the human being, the totality of his imagination, his energy, his vitality, the totality of the human condition, as the act connected to creating a child. Because what is happening at that moment is that the very core of the father's soul is, so to speak, being transmitted into this tipa, or is rather being embodied in this physical tipa. So this touches the deepest core of self and identity. Chassidus explains elsewhere that this is the reason for the infinitely intense love parents experience to their children, more than anything else in the world. We're, of course, talking about healthy and normal parents. Unfortunately, today, tragically, that is not the case. But if that's not the case, it means that the parents are not in tune with life, are not in tune with what is going on. But in a healthy case, there is nothing in the entire universe that strikes such a chord in the psyche of parents as the condition of their children. Because the child is not only a creation stemming from the father's or the mother's bodily substance. Rather, the little boy or the little girl is a continuum of the father's very life and soul. So the condition of his child affects him in his deepest place. And similar is the case concerning a mother and a child, but it's over there, it takes on a different form and a different issue. The Alter Rebbe is not addressing that here presently in this parak. In other words, this would mean that in its original source, a child, a daughter or a son, is inseparable of its father. And it's only as a result of a complex evolutionary process, both within the father's body and outside of his body, that the very essence of the parent assumes a distinct identity resulting in the structure of a newborn baby. And the same is true in the Nimshel. Just as this is true in the metaphor, it's also true in the Nimshel, in the relationship of the Jew to Hashem, which also will explain somewhat the term chelek. You see, when we are addressing the supernal realities, the terms used are at best remote parables to allow us to gain somewhat of an understanding in the nature of these realities. So when we use the term chelek, it should not be perceived as meaning a part in the literal sense of the word. Chas v'shalom, Hashem is indivisible in any form or fashion as discussed earlier. Chelek denotes, you might say, rather, the dubious nature of the neshama, similar to the dubious nature of the child. Where on one hand, the neshama does assume a distinct identity. The neshama is a consciousness consisting of a personality and character. We will soon learn in chapter 3 about the 10 faculties and attributes the neshama consists of: emotional, intellectual, functional, and so forth. And on the other hand, the neshama is essentially, so to speak, part and parcel of Hashem Himself. The neshama is totally connected, essentially, with the divine reality and essence. Similar to the dubious nature of a child, where on one hand it assumes a wholly separate reality, the child does not remain part of its father's soul or part of its father's body. Rather,
The child ultimately emerges into the world to function as a thinking, feeling, and achieving human being. On the other hand, this very same child is essentially a continuum of its father's very identity and soul. So the term chelik, interestingly, describes the phenomenon of essence emerging into a distinct being. Something which is not external, which is not additional, which is not secondary. Something which essentially is inseparable of the essence. It's part of the essence, so to speak. And the term part is just a borrowed term. It's connected to the essence. It's part and parcel of the essence. And that very essence is metamorphosized and transformed and emerges as a distinct being. That paradox, that essential paradox, is what we mean essentially when we use the term chelik. So just as when we address and we talk about a child, and we discuss the child being a part of its father, chelik min ha'av, it doesn't mean that if we were to divide the father into parts, theoretically, he would be one of them. Obviously, that's not the case. That's not what it's meant. A child inhabits a second independent body. So we call him a chelik of the father to denote that it is the father's essence that has been transformed into a child. And similarly, although in a much more abstract and remote fashion, is true concerning the neshama. There's one more point, however, I want to make concerning this issue of chelik. And that is, even when we say that the neshama is a chelik l'kamim al mamish, we emphasize that the neshama comes from chachmasi yisbarach. We don't say that the neshama is a part of atzmus. We don't say the neshama is a part of Hashem's essence. We say the neshama comes from chachma, mimachshavti v'chachmasi yisbarach. We don't say, the Alter Rebbe doesn't say me'atzmusi yisbarach, from his essence. He says from his chachma. And chachma is one of the divine spheres. It's one of the divine emanations and projections. Although hu v'chachmasi yechad, he and his wisdom are one, as the Alter Rebbe emphasizes here in Tanya. But nevertheless, the very fact that we emphasize chachmasi yisbarach means and indicates that we are addressing the process in which the atzmus, the essence of Hashem, is revealed and projected through a certain form and definition, and from there the neshama stems. And like Dr. Rebbe will soon explain in the footnote, at the conclusion of the footnote, which we will learn next week, that this process occurs only after a tzimtzum state. This is a post-tzimtzum condition when the idea of chachma is introduced, and we say huva chachma sayachat, which means after Hashem contracts himself. But I just want to add that this, all of this is quite complex. It's a profound issue. It's discussed at length in the literature of Kabbalah and Chassidus. And understanding it requires a good grasp of some of the foundational ideas in Jewish mysticism. We won't get into the details, but a lot of it will become clearer as we continue forth learning the chapters of Tanya. Yeah. If there are any more sources for the idea that the neshama is a chelik l'kamim al mamish besides the sources I mentioned. Paper? You're writing a paper on the issue. That's why you're asking the question. Yet there are actually many more sources for the expression. I mentioned four sources that the neshama is a chelik l'kamim al. The Arizal and Sharuch HaKadosh, the Reishis Chachma, the Shefatal and the Yosher Levav. I mentioned those which resemble the terminology the Alter Rebbe uses. The Alter Rebbe's choice of words is almost verbatim of those four sources that I mentioned, especially the Yosher Levav, the Shefatal. That's why I mentioned those four. But the concept, the very concept, is to be found in very many works of Kabbalah. In fact, I have written down some of the sources. For example, in Pardus Rimoinim of the Ramak, of Reb Moshe Kordaviru in the beginning of Shar Lamed Beis, He writes, "Kvar nizba'ir b'shara koydim shah adam u chelak alakamim mal." It has already been explained in the previous portal that man is a chelak alakamim mal. His Talmud, Reb Moshe Alshich, writes it in his Sfarim Sheshanas Ha'amakim and Reimim Muskel. Inshallah, Master Kabbalist Reb Yeshaya Horowitz in Shnei Luchis Abriz mentions this more than 24 times. In Arachayim, it says, in the commentary of Arachayim, in Parshas Bereshis and in Parshas Yisra. This is all in addition to the Arizal, the Reishis Chachma, and the Shefetal and the Yosha Levav, which I mentioned earlier. Ah, the Ramchal. Yet Rabbi Shechaim Lutzatu says this in his Svarim Chaykir and Mekubal, as well as in his Sefer Da'as Tvunais. The truth is that this term, this phrase, that the neshama of man is a chelik alakamimal, is also found in some of the mefarshim on the pasuk Vayipach Bap of Nishmas Chayim. In Parshas Bereishis, Perek Beis, Pasuk Zayin. The Klayaka writes, Nishmas Chayim hi hanefesh hamaskelus hanitzchi, tseil madmin hanefeyach v'timtza shezem medaber b'chelik alakamimal. Nishmas Chayim is referring to the cognitive, eternal soul. Go and learn the nature of a blower and you will see that the neshama is a chelik alakamimal. The Malbim on the Pasuk also writes this and elaborates on this and elaborates this point in even a more elaborate manner than the Klayakar. Talking about it, however, let me make mention of the fact that there was a famous Jewish philosopher whose name was Reb Menashe ben Yisrael. He was a great activist, lived in the 17th century in Amsterdam. He is one of the people who was very influential in allowing England, in persuading England to readmit the Jews again into their country. Since their expulsion, I think 300 years earlier, from England. So Reb Menashe ben Yisrael was very active in that. He has a sefer called Nishmas Chaim, and there he criticizes severely the Shefatal for saying that the Neshama is a chelik l'kamimah. That is his opinion about it, but as mentioned in very many works of Kabbalah, this is discussed, and it's discussed in great detail. In fact, someone in 1955, a Jew, wrote a letter to the Rebbe about it. And the Rebbe responded that the idea of the source of the neshama is part of the wisdom of Kabbalah. And therefore, Reb Menashe ben Yisrael, in his time, the teachings of Kabbalah were not spread in all the corners of the world, and they were not explained as they were explained in later generations. So Reb Menashe ben Yisrael was a great philosopher and a great activist, Rebbe says, and so forth, but he did not have a thorough knowledge in the field of Kabbalah because of the result that Kabbalah was not spread sufficiently in his country and in his area. Although in Nishmas Chaim there are several things, the Rebbe says, that are connected to Kabbalah. So therefore, someone who doesn't have a thorough understanding in Kabbalah can obviously come to the conclusion that this idea is antithetical to Amunah, like the Nishmas Chaim does come to the conclusion. But after we see the fact that the Kabbalists discuss this at length, and as mentioned, it's even mentioned in Mefarshim, but the idea is discussed in Kabbalah at length, obviously this is something which requires an understanding of Kabbalah, and when we do have that understanding, the questions that he presents are eliminated. And the Rebbe brings the Rosh. There's a Rosh in Baba Kama, the fourth chapter, which explains the reason why halacha kirav beisura v'chishmol bedin in various issues the halacha is like Rav and others like Shmuel. So he says, because Shmuel was accustomed and frequently dealt with these particular issues, and therefore he was much more medayik in these issues, and he actually probed the depth of these specific issues Shmuel bedinah. And therefore the halacha is like Shmuel in these areas. So the Rebbe says the same is true in every single area. Someone who doesn't deal with a certain issue cannot really give a psak din, cannot give a verdict in that particular issue unless he totally researched it and analyzed it thoroughly from all angles and so forth. Now, Reb Shapsi Sheftel Horowitz, the author of Shefatal, heard about the criticism that has been evoked on what he wrote, that the neshama is a chelik alakamimal, and that's why he authored a second sefer, Nishma Shapsi Alevi, which I mentioned earlier. And there he defends this position, that the neshama is a chelik alakamimal. And by the way, in the beginning of Shar Hey, of that sefer, he says that the source, that the neshama is a chelik alakamimal, is the Ramban. He says that's the first primary source. The Ramban on the Pasuk Vayipach Bap of Nishmas Chaim writes, and I quote, Yirmoiz lanu hakosuv hazeh mailas hanefesh yisoida v'soida v'amar ki unapach ba'apov nishmas chayim lohidia ki leibaba min ha'yisoides kasheramas b'nefesh atnua Gamloy beishtalshulus min asichlim hanivdolim, avol hi ruach Hashem hagodol mipiv daas otvuno, ki hanifeyach ba'apoy acher minishmosa yitinboy. The Ramban says that this pasuk va'yipach ba'apoy minishmos chayim is telling us the greatness of the soul, its source, and its mystique and secret. The pasuk tells us that he blew into his nostrils a soul of life, says the Ramban, to notify us that the soul didn't come from the elements as the soul of movement in other creatures of the universe, not even as an evolution from the aloof, sublime intellectual beings. Rather, it's the spirit of Hashem, HaGadol of Hashem, coming from his mouth, his knowledge, and his understanding, because someone who blows in the nostrils of someone else is imbuing that person with part of his very neshama, with of his very soul. You want to know if the two issues discussed earlier about the difference between the neshama and the rest of the universe are connected with each other. Okay, the question, we mentioned earlier that there are two differences between the neshama and everything else that exists, which are indicated in the pasuk Vayipach Ba'apav Nishmas Chayim. Difference number one is that the neshama comes from the pnimius of Hashem, from Vayipach. It's a blow. It comes from the inside, from the internal energy of Hashem, not from the external energy of Hashem. And the other issue is that the other world, everything in the universe was created as a result of Hashem's energy, versus the neshama, which is not created as a result of Hashem's energy, but rather it is Hashem's energy. So one difference is Vayipach, the neshama is an aficha, comes from internal energy, the world comes from external energy. And another difference is that the neshama is the energy itself becomes the neshama, versus the rest of the world where the energy creates something else, which is the universe and everything that's contained in it. So you want to know if these two ideas are connected. Now the truth is they're not only connected, they're actually dependent upon each other, and they're very powerfully interrelated and interconnected. But it's a complex and nuanced issue, so we won't get into it in detail. I'll just say one point. What is the difference between pnimius and chitzonius, between internal energy and external energy? So let's take a person, for example. A human being operates on two levels of consciousness. One level of consciousness is the human being as he interacts with the environment which he inhabits. This is an external level of consciousness where the human being is impacted and affected by his surroundings, by people around him, and therefore he receives feedback from his environment, and he's responding to his environment, and he's interacting with his environment. This is the external level of man's consciousness. And then there is the pnimius, which is man's intimate self, that level of self where he is totally aloof, sublime, and independent, where he's not interacting with an outside realm, an outside reality, but he's totally this is the quintessence of the human being, where he's totally separated and aloof. He is disconnected from the reality which is outside of him, that is the part of man which is untouchable, so to speak, where he is intimately himself, not responding to energy outside of him, not receiving feedback from energy, not interacting with that energy. That part is usually not projected, revealed, or communicated. Sometimes we ourselves are unaware and don't have a relationship with that. Now, let's see how to put this. From this we understand that the pnimius, in order to function and to survive and to flourish, doesn't need an outside environment. It operates within itself. The intimate part of man operates within itself. But the concept, the chitzonius part of man, the external consciousness and energy of man, by necessity means that there is something outside of him with which he is interacting. Chitzonius means that he acknowledges a reality, a world which is outside of him, and he is impressed by that reality, he is affected by that reality, he affects that reality, he is impacted by it and he impacts it. So the Chitzonius element of man by necessity demonstrates and acknowledges the fact that there is a world outside of him. So from this we understand that there is a major difference when the chitzonius of man is involved in creating something and the pnimius of man is projected in something else. When the chitzonius of man creates something, when a chitzonius, the reality, creates something, this by definition means that this thing that it creates is something else, is something separate of it. Because that is the whole definition of chitzonius. The whole definition of the external energy of man is that it relates to something else outside of him. That is what makes it external. So therefore, when we say the Chitzonius creates something, by definition it means that the Chitzonius is creating something else, is creating an entity outside of him. But when we say that the Pnimius is revealed in something, it remains the very same Pnimius without any change. Because the whole idea of Pnimius is that place where the human being is totally himself, not interacting with anything outside of him. So when that Pnimius is projected, it is the very same Pnimius. There's no other reality that has been introduced, created, fashioned, or formed. So therefore, this is the difference also kivayachol concerning HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we say that Hashem created the world through His external energy, it's that level where Hashem contracted Himself and imbued Himself and emanated, He contracted Himself to the extent that the world has significance, that something else plays a role. That is external energy, that level of divinity which gives room for a world, which gives room for life and so forth. So when we say that that level created a world, by definition it means that that energy created something else, so to speak. But when we say that the neshama comes vayipach from the pnimius of Hashem, the pnimius is that level of Hashem which is totally aloof and sublime of any interaction with an outside realm. So when we say that the neshama is an embodiment of the pnimius of Hashem, it means that the very same energy is the essence of the neshama. That's the point. Conclude with a story. Told about one of the Hasidim of the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe. His name was Reb Munya Mazenson. He was an extraordinary scholar. He was a diamond merchant, a great philanthropist. And he came to the Rebbe for Yom Tov, and at the conclusion of Yom Tov, the Hasidim who came for the holidays would visit the Rebbe. They would go in what was called a yichidus, a one-on-one soul-to-soul meeting with the Rebbe. So Reb Munya was waiting in line, and in back of Reb Munya was another Jew who was totally different. This was a Jew who was a simpleton. He was an illiterate. He did not know how to learn. He barely knew how to read Hebrew. He knew nothing. He was a very, very simple Jew, but he was a God-fearing man. Reb Munya Mazenson's turn came, and he went into the Rebbe, and the Rebbe Rashab spent with him 5 minutes. And then he left. The next Jew, the simpleton, came in, and the Rebbe Rashab spent with him an hour. And Reb Munya saw this, and he was totally amazed. He was astonished. He couldn't believe it. And he went into the Rebbe, and he poured his heart out to the Rebbe. He says, "I don't understand. With all due respect, I know this Jew. He is personalityless. He's a simpleton. He knows nothing. He feels nothing. And why is it that the Rebbe gives me 5 minutes, and this Jew the Rebbe spends an hour with?" So the Rebbe begins explaining to him the uniqueness of a neshama of a Jew, a chelek alekamim mal mamish, the preciousness of every single Jew, even the most simple of Jews. But Reb Munya still seems to disagree. He fails to comprehend. He tells the Rebbe, "But I know this guy. I know him very well. He's a nobody. There's nothing to him. What did the Rebbe do for an hour with him? And why did I only get 5 minutes?" And the Rebbe continued to elaborate the point about the value and the significance of every Jew, and how we can never understand the true value of an neshama, which is mamish, part of the divine, of the godly reality. It's a child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But after everything Reb Munya tells the Rebbe, Rebbe, ich verstehe nicht. I just don't understand. No. The Rebbe didn't respond. And he left the room. Prior to his going home, his custom was every year to present to the Rebbe a diamond, which he purchased that year. In fact, he would always give the Rebbe the best diamond, the most superb diamond, which he purchased during the last year. And he would give it to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe would use it for his many charitable causes and institutions that he had in Russia at that time. So Reb Bunya came into the room prior to his departure home, and he presented to the Rebbe the diamond, and he began telling the Rebbe the beauty, the amazing elements and characteristics and features of this diamond. He told the Rebbe that the experts say that this is one of the most exquisite, beautiful, unbelievable diamonds. He tells the Rebbe how much he paid for it, and he elaborates and he explains all the various features and unique qualities that this diamond possesses. And the Rebbe lifts it and begins turning it from one side, and then turns it over to the other side, and looks at it this way and this way, and he tells Reb Manya, I don't see any special quality to this. To me, it seems like a simple pebble. Look outside in my garden, there are many pebbles and stones, and to me, they seem extremely similar, very similar. Reb Manya is frustrated. He tells the Rebbe, what do you mean? This is one of the most beautiful, expensive, exquisite diamonds that's found in Russia this time. This season, this year. And the Rebbe looks at it again. He says, I'm sorry, but I just don't see the beauty. I'm looking and it seems to me like a simple pebble. So Reb Manya says that you have to look deeper. You have to know how to appreciate a diamond. You have to realize that sometimes externally it could be identical to another pebble, but really it's much deeper and much greater and so forth. The Rebbe again is looking and looking and looking, and finally he turns to Reb Manya. He says, I'm sorry, Reb Manya, ich seh nicht. I do not see the beauty of this diamond. So Reb Manya, with all his frustration, he says, Rebbe, what should I tell you? On a diamond, you have to be a maven. A maven means someone with a keen understanding and sensitivity. On a diamond, you have to have an understanding and a sensitivity. The Rebbe smiles. He turns to Reb Manya and he says, yes, Reb Manya, yes, Reb Manya. On a neshama, you have to be a maven. Have a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.